Good morning, everybody, and happy Easter. We're going to continue with the David story. We had the story of Bathsheba last time, and then things start to get a little rocky for David. So this is, just to give you a heads up, this is covering several chapters, so we won't have time to get through all of it. We'll go as quickly and diligently as possible through some of the main points. But this is going to be talking about Absalom. Does anybody know Absalom off the top of their heads? Or read ahead, maybe? Absalom is what we would look at as, through the biblical context, the biblical story, he would be taking the place of the serpent in this cycle. He is got a lot of dark going through his head. He's got a lot of not so good that happens with Absalom's story. And there's a couple things that we're going to point out, because, again, I think this is a story that very heavily points to God, the Father, Christ, what he does for us. And it being an Easter Sunday, this should be a celebration, right? And we should focus on that, not force the story into that frame, but I think this is the perfect story for Easter, because we see a father that longs for a son even after his son does wicked. And Bodhi's excited, so we're going to skip over some parts. Absalom's kind of a contorted character. He wants to make his sister, which is done often in biblical times, his sister from another mother, right? Yeah, sister from another mother, wants to make him his wife, and in this story, I mean, it's what we read about. We see something pleasing to the eyes, and human nature, human tendency is to take. So Absalom takes in a wretched way his sister's innocence, and then afterwards there comes a quarrel with his brother, and we're going to start there, and we're going to read a little bit of this, and then we're going to skip over a little bit, read a little bit, skip, and we're just going to bounce around a little bit. But what I hope we can do in this story is, I hope y'all are starting to see the cycles. The rise, the fall, the rise, the fall, the rise, the fall. Because once we start to see the cycles, we can overlap them with just the whole story. Because all these little tidbits that we're getting is over and over and over and over pointing to the cross. And I think that's an important way to recognize and to read the Bible is to watch these stories. Though we don't often see it unless we're looking for it, these stories are pointing to something much greater to come. So we're going to start in 2 Samuel 13, verse 23. I am going to read the memory verse. I haven't been doing great about that, but the memory verse is Psalms 32, 5. I acknowledged my sin to you, and I did not cover my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. 2 years later, when Absalom's sheep shearers were at Baal Hazor, near the border of Ephraim, he invited all the king's sons to come there. Absalom went to the king and said, your servant has had shears come. Will the king and his attendants please join me? No, my son, the king replied, all of us should not go. We would only be a burden to you. although Absalom urged him, he still refused to go, but he gave him his blessing. Then Absalom said, "If not, please let my brother Amnon come with us." The king asked him, "Why should he go with you?" But Absalom urged him, so he sent him with Amnon, the rest of the king's sons. Absalom ordered his men, "Listen, when Amnon is in high spirits from drinking wine, and I say to you, strike Amnon down and kill him, don't be afraid. Haven't I given you this order? Be strong and brave." So Absalom's men did to Amnon what Absalom had ordered. And all the king's sons got up, mounted their mules, and fled. While they were on their way, the report came to David, "Absalom has struck down all the king's sons. Not one of them is left." The king stood up, tore his clothes, and lay down on the ground. And all his attendants stood by with their clothes torn. But Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother, said, "My lord should not think that they killed all the princes. Only Amnon is dead. This has been Absalom's express intention ever since the day Amnon raped his sister Tamar. By my lord, the king should not be concerned about the report that all the king's sons are dead. Only Amnon is dead." Meanwhile, Absalom, and I do apologize, I got those mixed up. Absalom wasn't the one that got with his sister. Amnon was the one that got with his sister. So clear that up. I apologize. So this is a revenge story. "My lord the king should not be concerned about his report that all the king's sons are dead. Only Amnon is dead. Meanwhile, Absalom had fled. Now the man standing watched, looked up, and saw many people on the road west of him coming down the side of the hill. Watchmen went and told the king, I see men in the direction of Horonaim on the side of the hill. Jonadab said to the king, see, the king's sons have come. It has happened just as your servant said." As he finished speaking, the king's sons came in, wailing loudly. The king too, and all his attendants wept very bitterly. Absalom fled and went to Talmai, son of Amminadab, the king of Geshur, but King David mourned many days for his son. After Absalom fled, he went to Geshur. He stayed there 3 years, and King David longed to go to Absalom, for he was consoled concerning Amnon's death. So, the whole picture of the story, and I did get those two reversed, so I apologize about that. Absalom's taking revenge for his sister. Amnon did something wretched to his sister. This is revenge, and he invites all the king's sons over there, and he strikes them down. And what this is going to lead into, Absalom flees. David longs for his return. Even though he killed one of his sons, he longs for his return, and he's mournful. And then Joab is going to be David's kind of right-hand man. Joab talks to the king and is like, "Hey, just bring him back. It's not what he did." I mean, he kind of justifies it a little bit, right? And so what David does in this moment is extend the grace and what we see here. And this is what I'm going to steal a line from somebody that I work with. I hope I'm phrasing it properly. His name is Jeremy Homer. He has some different views than I do, but a lot of the same. He's somebody who chases God wholeheartedly. And so he comes from a place, his stance is people are the most wretched. When you wrong somebody else, or when somebody wrongs you, when I love this about him, his heart, his mind, is, have I not done so much worse to God? When somebody goes against Jeremy in a way that probably none of us would be all too pleased, right? We all have these situations in our life where there's some conflict, there's some strife, and people are doing some things. I remember as a kid, Dad wouldn't let me hit anybody. right? But there are some kids that just keep messing with you until you're about to snap, right? And it happens throughout your whole lives, and hopefully cooler heads prevail. I'm not going to say my head was cool, but I did listen to him most of the time. But this is why I appreciate his mindset. If we look at life through those goggles, how much more have I done to God? That's a hard place to put yourself in. How many more times have I turned my back on God to do what's pleasing to Hunter? How many times have I disobeyed God just so that Hunter could get what Hunter wants in that moment? When you look at life through those goggles, it kind of changes some things. Because when somebody wrongs you and you're thinking, but man, how poorly have I treated God? How poorly have I treated the guy who sent his son down to sacrifice himself so that I could have a relationship with him? How poorly have I treated that person that has done everything for me? And I hope we can kind of read in this context, because David shows a glimpse of this, right? Absalom kills his son, and David's going to bring a guy back into his house that is going to try to take over the kingdom. His own son, made in the image of him, rebels against his father and tries to take over his kingdom after he's already extended this grace and mercy out to him.
God told him it was going to happen.
God told him it was going to happen, right? So he knew something was coming. But is that story starting to sound a little familiar? So we're going to keep reading. I'm going to read part of 14. I might skip ahead a few verses, and then we're going to get in a little bit further in chapter 15 and 18, hopefully. Joab, son of Zeruiah, knew that the king's heart longed for Absalom. So Joab sent someone to Tekoa, and he had a wise woman brought from there. He said to her, "Pretend you are in mourning, dress in your mourning clothes, and don't use any cosmetic lotions. Act like a woman who has spent many days grieving for the dead, then go to the king and speak these words to him." And Joab put the words in her mouth. When the woman from Tekoa went to the king, she fell on her face to the ground to pay him honor. And she said, "Help me, your majesty." The king asked her, "What is troubling you?" She said, "I am a widow. My husband is dead. I, your servant, had two sons. They got into a fight with each other in the field, and no one was there to separate them. One struck the other and killed him. Now the whole clan has risen up against your servant. They said, 'Hand over the one who struck his brother down so that we may put him to death for the life of his brother whom he killed. Then we will get rid of the heir as well.' They will put out the only burning coal I have left, leaving my husband neither name nor descendant on the face of the earth." The king said to the woman, "Go home, and I will issue an order on your behalf." But the woman from Tekoa said to him, "Let the Lord my king pardon me and my family, and let the king and his throne be without guilt." The king replied, "If anyone says anything to you, bring them to me, and they will not bother you again." She said, "Then the king invoked the Lord his God to prevent the avenger of blood from adding to the destruction so that my son will not be destroyed. As surely as the Lord lives," he said, "not one hair of your son's head will fall to the ground." This is starting to sound a little Cain and Abel-ish. We get these vivid stories, right? What did Joab do? He's like, "Hey, let's take this, let's take this story of Absalom and your other son, Amnon, and let's kind of dull it down a little bit, right? Let's give this story to King David that there's somebody, they're fighting in the field, and one strikes the other one down." So David's obviously in that place, he's speaking as kings often would in this time. People bring them their grievances, and he settles a matter for them, right? And in this matter, Joab's trying to get the point across that, hey, Joab's looking out for David, and I wholeheartedly believe that. But at the same time, on the flip side, we can put Joab in this kind of little bit deceiver role, right? Because if Joab wanted to have a conversation, what's the punishment for him, huh? Biblically, by law. Absalom. They should kill him. Right? And so, in this story, the people, it says, the people are calling out for blood. The people want to take my husband's only heir so that he won't have name or descendant on the rest of the earth. And what does David say? Like, hey, if anybody bothers you, bring him to me. And then Joab's going to get his little word in. He's like, hey, just bring Absalom. But are the stories different? They have a lot of the same context, but what this is something that I think we do often is we can try and, again, loopholes. We talk about loopholes. So, this guy, I'm sorry, I'm a car salesman. I'm not crazy. I'm trying to be honest. But whenever you're selling, in the selling process, if you have a sales manager and you're green and you're just starting out, they're always going to tell you you're going to have words ringing in your head for the rest of forever. And it's trust the process. What does trust the process mean? They give you these sales steps. As long as you're trying to get to the next step, then you're doing good. If you can get everybody through all the steps, then you sold the car, right? It's easy. Trust the process. What we oftentimes try to do is take those steps and we try to reverse them. We go, hey, I did this, but what if we were right here? Like, would that be justifiable? What if we were right here? Well, then if we're okay right here, shouldn't we just be okay with what, like, we have this way of talking ourselves into what we do is okay. And in this moment, Joab gives this story that's not the same because Absalom's doing what? He invites everybody over for a feast and instructs people to strike him down? It's a little bit different than two brothers fighting in the field. Is the punishment the same? Yes. Punishment for sin? Death. All the way around. Is the punishment the same? Yes. Are the actions the same? No. But we can talk ourselves out of, hey, I did this. That is way wrong. But hey, maybe if I took one step back, maybe it wouldn't have been as bad. And if I could justify that, then I'm close enough to justifying what I actually did. It's twisted. It's a twisted game, and I've played it with myself, so I understand it, and I imagine y'all have done the same. It's twisted. It's how our heads work. At least my head works. I don't know how y'all's head works, but again, sorry, cheeky. When you get this in your head, it's a habitual thing that you can do over and over and over. Because what are you teaching yourself to do? Find a loophole. You're teaching a mindset. Is it going to look the same every time? No, but you're teaching this mindset that there's loopholes out there. Are there loopholes out there? No. There's one loophole. It's Christ.
Sometimes it's quicksand.
Right? God gave us the loophole. Because what's the punishment for sin? Death. And when God outlines the law to show us that, hey, we're all falling short of the law, and this is the standard that you need to live up to, and we all fall short of that, guess what we now need? A loophole. But God gave us one, designed by Him. If you're doing it yourself in your head, then you're trading places with the guy who gave you that opportunity. And that's a scary place to be. So we have David in the story, and then this story is going to convince David. Joab comes, and again, it's just a sales pitch. You'd be shocked to read just the sales attitude of all these stories. I mean, when you have the serpent, and he's like, well, did you really say that? Did God really say you couldn't eat of the fruit? And automatically, there's a seed in your head like, well, what did he not tell me to do? Let's focus on what God's telling me not to do. Oh, he told me not to touch that one. Looks pretty good, doesn't it? It does look pretty good, right? If we just go through these processes of the human psychology, and what you fixate on is what you do. So if you're fixating on a loophole, you're going to find a loophole. If you're fixating on what's wrong, typically you're going to do wrong. Again, if you're fixating on God, what are you filling yourself up with? God. Then guess what you get to do? Live for Him. But it never works when we get in our heads this, don't do, don't do, don't do, don't do. It's no different from me as a grown man, but you can see it very evidently in kids. When you tell Brooks not to do something, what's he want to do? He's like, man, I really want to do that. You can just see it in his face, his little eyes. He's like, Brooks, do not do that. He's like, oh, I'm going to try it. Right? And we grow up, and we don't grow out of it. It just changes from dunking his hand into drinks or throwing stuff in people's drinks to Lord knows whatever he's going to get into later on in life. Right? But it's how our heads work. We think we grow out of it, and that's just not being honest with yourself. We do it in different ways. There's one thing that you can fill yourself up with that's going to exude what you are meant to reflect. That's Christ. I imagine all your marriages, all your relationships, whether it's with a brother, a sister, a wife, whatever your relationship is that you can fixate on, if you're coming from a place of Christ, it's going to be a lot better. Every time. Without doubt. Because how are you treating people? Right. And there's a lot of don't do's in this world, right? A lot of do not touch. Don't cross this line. And instead of fixating on Christ, we fixate on the line. And I think it comes out of good intent, right? Because we don't want to cross that line. But when God gives the greatest command and says, hey, against these things, there are no laws. What's he saying? Hey, you're not right. You're going to be close to that line if you just follow me. If you just lock in on me, then don't worry about the line. Because where's he? Way, 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 way over there. And where's the line? It's right there. What do we like to do? Toe the line. What should we do? Be running that way. Not because you're scared of the line, but because you want to follow Christ. Not because you're scared of this, but because we're called into relationship with Him. And in your relationship, who likes to be pursued? I do. My wife does. That's what a relationship is. A guy that I just texted him a happy birthday. Twice, actually. One because he's in Japan, so I texted him yesterday because they're ahead. And once this morning. So he got a Japanese and an American birthday. But he pursues me. It feels good. Right? when there's a relationship with somebody that you can just build and build and build and build, and he's chasing you and you're chasing him, and whatever the case is, with what, it's not just down to marriage, it's brother, sister, friend. All of these relationships feels pretty good when it's right with God. When it's reflecting what relationships meant to be, it feels pretty good, doesn't it? So out of this, David brings Absalom back, and he gets repaid oftentimes the way we repay God. In the course of time, Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses and with 50 men to run. We're in chapter 15 now. Sorry, we skipped ahead a little bit. And I'm way behind. He would get up early and stand by the side of the road leading to the city gate. Whenever anyone came with a complaint to be placed before the king for a decision, Absalom would call out to him, "What town are you from?" He would answer, "Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel." And Absalom would say to him, "Look, your claims are valid and proper, but there is no representative of the king to hear you." And Absalom would add, "If only I were appointed judge in the land, then everyone who has a complaint or case would come see me, and I would see that they receive justice." Also, whenever anyone approached him to bow down before him, Absalom would reach out his hand, take hold of him, and kiss him. Absalom behaved this way toward all the Israelites who came to the king asking for justice. And so he stole the hearts of the people of Israel. What did Absalom just do? He traded places with the king. He sat outside the city gates, and when people are bringing complaints, what does he do? He steals them. This is the king's business, right? And then he's saying, "Hey, if only I were appointed judge in the land, then people could just bring them to me instead of my father, and I could resolve them." And what's he doing? He's out there politicianing, kissing babies, doing all the right things. And what does it say? He stole the hearts of the people of Israel. At the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Let me go to Hebron and fulfill a vow I made to the Lord while your servant was living at Geshur in Aram. I made this vow: if the Lord takes me back to Jerusalem, I will worship the Lord in Hebron." I'm not going to say this emphatically. This is Hunter noticing this over and over. But this, when Kevin talked about oaths last week, I hope we're overlaying this, because David, his son Absalom, a lot of these people, how did they get out to where they're about to go do something naughty? "I made an oath to God that I would come back to this place and worship him. I made an oath to God that I would go and do this. I made an oath to God that I would go and do that." When Jonathan sticks up for David, he said, "Hey, he made an oath to God and he's got to go do this and take care of his sacrifice." It's deceitful, right? What's David do? Hiding behind a rock, waiting for Jonathan to shoot arrows. "I made an oath to God that I would go worship God over here." And Absalom's about to spark rebellion in his house. But I hope we're starting to... It almost makes it... Anytime you hear that story, something's about to happen, right? They're making this excuse. They're making this excuse for what they're about to do, so that they can garner some space, and that space is going to provide them to do whatever wicked act that they're about to do. Hopefully that's ringing some bells. What do we need from Christ when we, what do we try to do when we're about to do something bad? You try to kind of block the God part out, right? You don't want to tell yourself that God's watching you. You want to pretend that there's this invisible box that you can just get away with this and God's really not watching you in this moment, right? So the space that we try to create is false. It's not there. But when people go through this line and through this rebellion and all this starts to happen, we see it over and over and over again that there's space created. So Absalom was just created space, lying to his own father. And in his head, I can just see it. He's like, I've already stole the hearts of Israel. We're about to, I'm getting ready to roll. I'm going to get some space, and then things are going to go down. Then Absalom sent secret messengers throughout the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as you hear the sound of trumpets, then say, Absalom is king in Hebron. 200 men from Jerusalem had accompanied Absalom. They had been invited as guests and went quiet, innocently, knowing nothing about the matter. While Absalom was offering sacrifices, he also sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, and David's counselor to come from Gilo, his hometown. And so the conspiracy gained strength, and Absalom's following kept on increasing. He's dragging people down with him at this point, isn't he? He brings 200 men, probably king appointed, that know nothing about what's going on. But what's the visual that this creates? Oh, he even brings David's counselor in. Knowing? No. But now he's created this visual that, hey, even David's counselor is on Absalom's side. Like, everybody just left David. He brought 200 men from Israel that should be David's, from Jerusalem. And he brought David's counselor, and then he says, he sends out secret messengers and say, hey, when the trumpet blows, everybody's to say Absalom's king. And when that happens, guess what they're going to look at? Absalom. And guess who's going to be around him? Everybody that should be around David. Knowingly or not, they're there. So it creates this visual that is hard to go against. A messenger came and told David, the hearts of the people of Israel are with Absalom. And David said to all of his officials who were with him in Jerusalem, come, we must flee, or none of us will escape from Absalom. We must leave immediately, or he will move quickly to overtake us and bring ruin on us and put the city to the sword. The king's officials answered him, your servants are ready to do whatever our lord the king chooses. The king set out with his entire household following him, but he left 10 concubines to take care of the palace. So the king set out with all the people following him, and they halted at the edge of the city. All his men marched past him, along with all the Kerethites and the Pelethites, and the 600 Gittites who had accompanied him from Gath marched before the king. The king said to Ittai, the Gittite, why should you come along with us? Go back and stay with King Absalom. You are a foreigner, an exile from your homeland. You come only yesterday, and today shall I make you wander about with us? When I do not know where I am going, go back and take your people with you. May the Lord show you kindness and faithfulness. But Ittai replies to the king, as surely as the Lord lives, as my lord the king lives, wherever my lord the king may be, whether it means life or death, there will your servant be. Wow, that's a pretty powerful testament. And there's so much more, and he's about to go again. He says, you only came yesterday. Go with, what does he call him? King Absalom. And may the Lord bless you. There's so many people that we'd like to zoom in on, and this is one that I think gets skipped over. Is a foreigner that leaves with King David, and he says, hey, you're going to be a whole lot better off over here. And he says, hey, wherever the king goes, I will go. Wherever the king goes, I will go. Even after David's already called him king. Wherever the king goes, I will go to the end of my days. Pretty much till death do us part. I was supposed to get through several more chapters. So I do apologize about that. Y'all read through chapter 18. This is a story, and again, how I phrased it at the beginning. David invites him back into his own home, where his own son's going to betray him yet again. When we get in these cycles, and I hope that mindset that sparks is honesty with ourselves. And through that, we should adopt at least partial mentality of the same thing that Homer says at our office. And anytime something goes bad, his head diverts directly to that. Man, I don't even deserve what I have. Humility and his humbleness, it exudes from him. Because he has an understanding and is honest enough with himself. That he doesn't deserve anything other than death. And out of grace and mercy from God, he's getting called into a place that's a lot better than what he deserves. So anything that's going on the home front, the earth front, he lets it roll off like water. Y'all read the next three chapters. Thank y'all for being here. Hopefully next week I'll be able to get through more of it. It looks like I will. I was kind of surprised how many chapters this wanted me to go over. But next week's should be easier to get through. Thank y'all for being here.